welcome to the very loosely crafted TV ABCs podcast. I say that because if you've listened before and you know that the TV ABCs podcasts are generally very formal, they contain an interview, they contain me doing some kind of cold read introduction. That's not what's happening right here. In fact, I'm back here on the off week with my drinking buddies, Greg and Diane. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
See, that's how informal we are. So we do have an interview coming up. Greg, tell people who the interview will be about halfway through the podcast.
We're recording this on a Monday night, which means that the second episode of Houdini and Doyle is airing on Global. I think it's at 8 p.m. I should have checked that before we started to record. But
we're too loose a podcast for you to do research.
We're too loose. Not even worrying about that. ET, PT, doesn't matter. It's doesn't on matter. On Monday nights.
MT, and, Newfoundland time.
CT, half an hour later in Newfoundland.
And the next day on the app.
Yes, that's right.
So Ryan Williams here.
We've got it covered, I think.
Well, anyway. So there is I sat down with David Shore, who people will know or maybe don't know, created House. And David Hoselton, who was also involved with House. He was an executive producer on House. And the two of them, along with a third David named David Titcher, have created this show called Houdini and Doyle. And we were talking a little bit about this earlier. And if you want to compare it to something, I would say that it's kind of Murdoch Mysteries with a Hollywood budget, because it's a period piece. It's based around the real friendship that Harry Houdini, the illusionist, and Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of the Sherlock Holmes books, and many others, but everybody knows him from Sherlock Holmes, the real friendship that they shared in the 1920s. But what they've done, what the three Davids have done, and David Shore and David Hoselton are both Canadian, and that's why we're talking about this, and Houdini and Doyle is airing on Global, and it's a Global original, and it's produced by Shaftesbury, who also produces Murdoch Mysteries. So you're framing it around this real-life friendship, but going back about 20 years to 1901, when the supernatural was still big. Science hadn't really come to the...
Supernatural it was a big thing, man.
It was a thing, man. It was a thing. There were people where dressed up like ghosts and vampires. So science hadn't kind of come along yet. And so, you know...
I don't even know why Anthony thinks it's that funny.
Because I'm an idiot. I sound like an idiot when I talk.
You don't sound like an idiot. It's just that the line science hadn't been around yet.
Science wasn't invented yet.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
That's okay. It's fine.
Let me keep going.
Ignore Anthony. Okay. Have you learned nothing? Ignore Anthony.
Yes, we're loose. We're okay.
Just keep talking.
Yeah.
And he'll be quiet.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not, but that's okay.
Maybe he'll go away.
Science hadn't gotten far enough, and investigations. All right, listen. A lot of things weren't explained yet. They decided that ghosts might be behind it. So you've got Harry Houdini, who was a skeptic. You've got Arthur Conan Doyle, who was a believer. He believed in psychics and mediums and all that stuff. So when you've got that framework of the two guys butting heads, even though they were really friends, and now these guys have put these two characters in the storylines of their investigating supernatural goings-on in London. So you've got the two of them butting heads while trying to prove to each other that, yes, this is really supernatural goings-on in London, or no, it's actually just something else that we just haven't really discovered yet. So that's the framework for Houdini and Doyle.
You put it together and shit got real is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So what you're going to hear in a few minutes are the two Davids talking about how the show all came about, how they kind of perceived of it, and how they used that real friendship between these two real life characters to form the show.
Cool. So that's coming up in a little bit, and probably about the second half of the podcast. But before we kind of get into that, in hearing, because I mean, this is a show that I think we've heard about now for the past year from back when it was greenlit. First of all, you said it's a show it's an original by Global, but it's got Hollywood money. I don't understand how those two things come together, to be honest with you.
Have you learned nothing, Anthony?
Well, the other...
Flashpoint, Ricky Blue.
Yeah, I mean the other equation is that Fox down in the U.S. is also a producer on this program, and also there's a British broadcaster, and actually the first season of Houdini and Doyle has already aired in the U.K. So you've got the three countries throwing the money in.
There you go. Okay, yeah. That makes a bit more sense.
One thing I like about it is the casting. So it's which is not very Canadian, but Stephen Mangan plays. He plays Doyle, right?
Yeah.
He's the guy from Episodes, which is that Matt LeBlanc sitcom.
The Joey Show.
The Joey Show, yes. And what is his name? Weston.
Michael Weston.
Michael Weston plays Houdini. And he was actually on what was going to be, I think, a spinoff of House. He played a private detective on House for a little while, and there was rumors that was supposed to be a spinoff show. It never really got off the ground, though.
Oh, my gosh. I totally forgot about that potential spinoff.
Yeah.
Was so it called? Was it called Apartment? Apartment?
No. I'm not sure they titled it because I don't think it ever really went anywhere. I think he was on a few episodes, and it was supposed to be kind of what they call a backdoor pilot, where they were, going to introduce the character and then spin it off. And I don't think it ever really got its own show.
But Diane, you used to be like a House fanatic.
I was a House fanatic. Yes, I love that show, and I stand by that. I stopped watching after several seasons, but yes, I was
like, if there's anyone who would know about like a backdoor pilot coming out, it would have been you.
Yeah, I just it's memory more. I don't think they ever like did anything more with it other than I don't think it went very well when they aired it as part of House. Like, I don't think fans were clamoring to see more of this character. Right. But I think Michael Weston is a very entertaining actor. I think he's quirky, and I like him, so I don't mean that to be dismissive of him. I just think it's interesting casting. I was quite excited about the casting. It isn't, don't come into it expecting House, even though the Davids are from House. It is its own thing. It, like Greg, I think, mentioned, it's a little bit more along the lines of a Murdoch mystery than a House.
So I guess the question that I have to ask after hearing this is, and it's not meant to be pointed necessarily at this show in particular, is how do we still... Are we still okay with the historical period pieces, or have they started to become old in both ways? I mean, don't get me wrong. I get the narrative attraction to wanting to play something in that period in time. First of all, you can play around with a lot of parallel structure with regards to, modern times versus, let's say, 100 years ago. And you can say, oh, look, we're going to have this discussion on this social issue, which is a reflection on today's social issue. So there's an attraction there.
You can also get rid of the problem of everybody having a cell phone, and that destroys a lot of good detective plots, because so many detective plots could be ruined if why didn't they just use their cell phone?
And they have to walk everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I find myself lately, though, less enamored of any show that kind of does that and jumps back to a past. Now, that being said, I'm fine with playing with the genre. I think of a show like Diane's favorite, Firefly. nothing? which essentially does like a Western in the future.
Right.
It does play with...
But what about something like The Nick, which is a... Right. It's not a straight up medical drama because partly it's based in the past. I think, Downton Abbey was all the rage. I think Canadian Network and Shaftesbury would love to have a repeat of Murdoch Mysteries, because Murdoch Mysteries is getting quite old now.
Yeah.
It's probably getting expensive. They know it's going to go away at some point. Maybe not in the next couple of years, but it's, it's getting old, and so they need something to replace it. So I don't think there's much you can say as a blanket rule about period pieces. I think it's why you're turning it into a period piece. This one obviously wants to draw on the real life friendship, though I don't know that it matters that much, because I'm not sure how many people, you could have just made it a musician and a, a novelist who's a fan of the supernatural.
Right. Does the genre matter more than the setting in that case? So in this case, you happen to have, two buddies who go out and solve crimes, and you could essentially, as long as you've got the good characters and solid writing, you can place that anywhere.
Yeah, I think so. For me, I didn't know that Houdini and Doyle were friends. And watching the show, it doesn't really matter to me. It's not like they play that up. you know, it just happens to be these guys. And, you know, there could be people that wouldn't, that would watch the show and wouldn't even know the history behind either of these two characters and still like it. When a historical show is done well, it's great. I mean, I'm a history fan, so I really like shows like Murdoch Mysteries. You know, you mentioned The Nick already, which I really enjoy, and Downton Abbey and Mercy Street. I mean, I view, because I'm a fan of history, I like to learn this stuff. The thing is, when it's done well, it's good. When it's not done well, it's clunky. And I do have to say that there are some clunky bits in Houdini and Doyle. I mean, there have been some criticisms about how they throw modern music into the show. You know, I'm not really much of a stickler for that because I think that the show's a little bit more fun than that. And I mean, just because it's kind of a historical drama, I don't think that you need to stick to the right historical, you know, tropes and, you know, and have, you know, organ music playing or music of the time playing all the time.
Well, yeah, and that was almost like, I mean, that was busted open in films about 15, 20 years ago.
Sure.
Like it was like the Baz Luhrmann kind of film where it's like, you know, let's do a Shakespeare film, but let's put heavy metal music in.
Right.
Yeah.
I think
playing with it is fine. Yeah. Absolutely.
Me too. And the other thing is when I talk to people that are involved in these shows or I speak to fans of these shows, they're learning things. You know, I still remember sitting in history class and being pretty bored with the class, despite it being a history class, something that I was into. So the fact that you're getting, you know, very loosely in some cases, you're still getting a bit of a history lesson, I think is a bit of, you know, I think that's a good thing. And if it's exciting and it's well-written and it's entertaining, why not learn a little bit too? Now, that said, when you're watching Vikings, I mean, there are some situations and some characters there that are actually from history, but certainly they're not, you know, they're not sticking to it because the stuff wasn't written down, so you can't,
but,
you know, kind of hang
that,
your
doesn't
head.
Doesn't that air on the History Channel?
Are it you does.
It's not strict history?
Well, hey, if you want to go all the way back to when CSI New York aired on history, we can do that too.
Yeah. Well, doesn't Canadian Pickers air on the History Channel?
Let's not talk about Canadian Pickers. We're still getting page views. People are.
That's one of our most popular posts is that Canadian Pickers was canceled. It's like a media release or something. That's very depressing.
So what you're saying is, if you would like more episodes of Canadian Pickers, please write on Twitter to Greg_David.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Exactly. Absolutely. But I can do absolutely nothing for you.
I think the last... I was just going to say, the last historical period piece television show that I loved was Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, okay.
But it's funny because you watch a show like Vikings, like you mentioned, and it is a historical piece. But then people will put Vikings side by side with Game of Thrones. And I dare say that if Game of Thrones hadn't been so popular, you probably wouldn't have seen Vikings being made.
Yeah, and I also wonder how many people actually think that Game of Thrones is actually real or is based on history.
It's not.
See,
well,
here you go.
I mean, I think this, I'm a little bit tired of the, well, I'm a little bit tired of the detective drama in general, but, you know, the period piece detective drama seems to have become a genre of its own. Mm-hmm. But I think lumping all historical pieces together, I mean, you have to call Mad Men, you know, one of them.
Sure.
Call The Midwife, a UK series, which is a really great show, and it really puts you into that time. It's like the 1950s in East London, and you get this slice of life that you don't normally see on TV. The lower class, never mind the period part of it, but you know, I think there's something interesting to be said. Downton Abbey, of course, was hugely successful. I think when you get those hugely successful shows, then everyone wants to imitate them and, you know, take a little piece of it. And I think there's some of that going on where it's just anything that's British with, you know, a costume is hoping to get a little bit of the reflected glory of Downton Abbey. But I don't have a problem with historical in general, because I think if you're just going to say everything has to be set today and in the future, then you're limiting creativity. I don't think the time that a thing is set is really necessarily the be-all and end-all of the creativity of it.
I think a lot of it comes down now to, even beyond the period piece with regards to history, I think a lot of the variance is happening not necessarily by years or era, but by technology. So you can have a show in a slightly dystopian future, like Walking Dead, let's say, where the systems have fallen apart. And how much different is it from a Wild West show where the technology didn't exist in the Wild West, and now you've got this supposedly dystopian future show where the technology doesn't exist? Okay. Essentially, you have a bunch of people who still have to light fires, and you have to still use bow and arrows and all of that stuff. And so there is a certain parallel that happens when you reach in either direction. I think I tend to have more sympathy towards a fictional dystopian future than a attempting to be real but fictional past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, I mean, I was kind of kidding, but not really, about the cell phone issue. I think there is, just from a pure storytelling point of view, there's a real luxury to, a real luxury to not having to be married to today's technology, because that does limit some of your storytelling ability, or at least makes you work around the technology that we have today. Whereas if you put it in the distant past or the future, then you don't necessarily have to do that.
Right. Well, and then, I mean, some of the most popular shows, I mean, throughout television history, have either been Westerns or period pieces that weren't so far back. Like, I mean, MASH was a period piece when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the most popular shows. The Waltons was incredibly popular. You know, even in the UK, you have like comedies like Blackadder, which absolutely huge, and or even a show which was more recent, Freaks and Geeks, which only stepped back like one generation, essentially.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, yeah, Anne of Green Gables.
That 70s show.
Yeah. So, it's definitely interesting that you talk about a period piece, and I guess when we think about a period piece, we seem to in our minds go back to something to do with, I think we associate it with the technology paradigm, the idea that it has to be before, you know, a lot of electronics and telephones and televisions and stuff. As long as we're going back to a certain period in time where, you know, as long as cars had a crank on the front of them, I think we're okay with calling it a period piece.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I think that's the non-think piece on period pieces.
Well done.
Yes, that's the opposite of a think piece. before we kick into the interview, I believe, because normally on the TV ABC's podcast, it's usually in the middle of the episode that the beverage update happens. So I don't want to rob our listeners of having a beverage update this week, considering we're all here. So Diane, what kind of fizzy rooibos are you drinking?
Well, my rooibos is not fizzy, but it's a coconut rooibos, which is quite delicious. I got it from Edmonton. It's imported from the exotic lands of Edmonton. And I haven't actually had a sip of it yet, though, so I'm not sure this counts. I have a sparkling water in front of me that's pineapple sparkling water, but I haven't actually drank it yet because I'm sipping on what I had last week, which is kind of boring, except I'm trying to use up my Crown Royal. So I have a Crown Royal and ginger ale, which is inspired by Air Canada. I was on a flight and they had that as their feature cocktail.
And that now was I have a bottle.
And I know it was Crown and Ginger, and now I have a bottle of Crown to use up. So
wow.
Thanks, Air Canada.
There you go. So Greg, let me guess, you're drinking cider.
No, I'm not drinking cider.
What?
No, I'm sorry.
See
I'm
if anyone sorry. Sends you cider again.
I know.
Well, maybe they didn't, and that's why he's not drinking it.
Come on, people,
step up the game.
I wish bourbon was Canadian, because then people would send me bourbon.
No, I was looking in the fridge tonight, and there was the beer there, there was the cider there, there was a little bit of wine, and I decided that I would go for Canada Dry Ginger Ale, and I picked these up at the Metro, and I thought that they were cool because they're in like the retro glass bottle. Which, of course, adds, I think, $2 to the price. So,
hey, that, my friend, is the price of authenticity right there.
That's right. That's right. So I'm drinking it out of a glass bottle, and it makes me feel like a kid again. And tap water in a plastic cup. Those are my two drinks.
Wow, that last drink is the saddest drink I've ever heard in my life.
It's the saddest drink. Saddest drink in the world.
Is it Brita filtered at least?
It is Brita filtered, yes.
Artisanally Brita filtered.
Yes, but I'm getting near the end of the expiry date on the Brita filter, so it may not even be filtered anymore. It just might be cold. Andy or Andrew or Anth? Wow!
You sure that's all you're drinking there, my friend?
Wow, Anthony, bail me out. What are you drinking?
You sure you didn't have a couple ciders before you started?
I did. Yeah.
I found myself one of my favorite sipping whiskeys. It was back in the LCBO here in Ontario over the past couple of weeks. It's called Eagle Rare 10-Year. It is a bourbon. And now for my Sam Elliott moment. Eagle Rare Kentucky Straits bourbon whiskey is masterfully crafted and carefully aged for no less than 10 years. The rareness of this great breed of bourbon is evident in its complex aroma as well as the smooth and lingering taste. Eagle Rare is a bourbon that lives up to its name with its lofty, distinctive taste experience. And then I have to do the taste. Got to do the nose and the taste, because those are my favorites. Complex aromas of toffee, hints of orange peel, herbs, honey, leather, and oak. Bold, dry, oaky flavors with notes of candied almonds and very rich cocoa.
Leather?
That was beautiful.
Wow. You were almost sidelining there, so when you said that it was beautiful, it sounded like, you know, we're being taken over by Battlestar Galactica.
Speaking of period pieces.
That was beautiful.
The dystopian future.
So, we are going to be listening to a couple of the Davids, apparently.
Yes. David Shore and David Hoselton, yes.
Yes, who are tied in with Houdini and Doyle. I would have liked the show better if instead of "and," it would have been "n." Houdini and Doyle.
Sure.
Like rock and roll.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a lot better. You'll hear me come back afterwards, folks, to kind of wrap us up. But before, to let these two go so that they don't have to sit around for the entire time, Diane, why don't you tell people where they can find you when you're not hanging out here on a special episode of the TV ABC's podcast?
I am helping run TVA, the website, which is at tv-eh.com, and on Twitter at tv_eh. And I'm on Twitter at DEEKAYW. And where can you be found, Greg?
At exactly the same place, tv_eh, tveh.com. My own Twitter account is Greg_David. Andy, what
yes.
about you?
Remember,
Anthony, what about you?
Remember, if you want new episodes of Canadian Pickers, that's at Greg_David. You can find all the other podcasts that I do at anthonymarco.com. Find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And here you go, some Houdini and Doyle Davids for you. The Davids of Houdini and Doyle. I got to work on that for a title.
But I'm really excited about this show, Houdini and Doyle, because it's historical. It's got supernatural elements in it, so I'm already all in. Kind of give me the background about how the show came about, because I didn't even know that these guys were actually really friends and actually helped, you know, with New Scotland Yard. So tell me about how the show all came about.
It wasn't New Scotland Yard, but when did it become New Scotland Yard? It's relatively old.
The building was built like 1899 or something.
Was it called New Scotland Yard at that point?
I don't.
It's one of those weird things.
Okay,
it can be
so I'm going to go and research
Google
this. So you have it as Scotland Yard then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Old Scotland Yard.
Yeah. Scotland Yard. Okay.
The basic genesis of this is David Titcher, who's an executive producer.
Another David.
Yeah.
He didn't go to law school with us.
He's the guy that discovered this friendship. There was this real relationship between these two icons that came together with two very different attitudes to investigate. Not even investigate, but who cared about the paranormal were interested in. And so he took it to Shaftesbury, to Maggie Murphy at Shaftesbury. Maggie, you know, it's one of those ideas where you sort of go, when you hear it, you go, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, great.
Right.
And it's kind of real.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And so Maggie came to...
Maggie knew me from years ago, and she came to me via Sony, and I thought I had the same reaction. Every step along the way, it's been that kind of... And then Hoselton and I go way back, but we'd worked together for years on House as well, and so I came to him and said, hey, you want to do this thing with me?
And I was just like, Houdini and Doyle? Paranormal? They, you know, I'm kind of like the sci-fi geek, and I have all these books of, you know, one of my favorite is People Who Don't Know They're Dead. That's
Ooh.
The name of the book.
Okay.
And it's like when people die, they don't realize they're dead, and that's why they're ghosts. And so the way you get rid of them
so now
is
it makes sense.
You have to explain to them, you're dead, go away. And then they're like...
And then poof. It's like the Wile E. Coyote going off the end of the cliff, and somebody knows he's
I don't know if they're And I don't know, are they bummed? Or they're like,
yeah.
Or are they like, thank God, that's why I couldn't open doors and
exactly.
stuff like that.
That's why I could only push things.
Like, yeah, you know, it's right. like, because it was
that's
really sucking.
Yes,
you're dead. Yeah, and that's how we got rid of Shore. Yeah. That's all it took. No, so I just went, and then a period piece. I mean, there's just something awesome about it. It's good and bad. It's mm-hmm. hard and
right,
but interesting and fun and challenging. And just when I heard that, I went, you know, please. And so there was a little whimpering, and so it just went from there. I mean, we put together
yeah.
a pilot.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went to England, and
which was fun just by itself. But it was
right, yeah.
It was cool. Flew to England for like 3 days and met with all these different networks.
Did the pitch circus?
And there was a lot of interest, and they bought it, and then we sold it.
And ITV, they
right.
got it right away.
Right.
They were just like,
right.
Yeah.
And
then sold it to Global here, and so we got Global up here, and we got Fox in the States.
Yeah. And then we landed Fox, and then that was it.
Okay.
You know, that was, then we were good to go, and we had a guaranteed order of 10.
10 episodes, yes. How nice is that?
That was kind of my next question. Like, that's got to be the sweet spot, right? 10 episodes.
First of all, it's nice to have more than one.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a good point.
Yeah. And second of all, it's nice to have less than 24.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, all these years, I did a network show for years and
yeah.
years, and I was going, oh, you must be so jealous of cable. And I'm not jealous that they get to swear. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm not jealous that they get to show nudity.
No, right.
There was never a story I couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm.
There was never a story the network said, no, I don't want you going near that. I told the stories I wanted to tell in as an adult way as I think you could. I thought there was no compromise from my point of view
mm-hmm.
on that show. The 24 episodes, doing 24 episodes a year is
year after year after
year after year.
After year.
22 or 24.
Yeah.
It is just really, really, really difficult
mm-hmm.
to maintain the quality without
mm-hmm.
killing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's not a lot of super quality shows on network television.
Right.
It's
huge difference.
It's a bit of a sausage factory.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
Yeah. And so 10 is enough to really get in there and explore the characters
mm-hmm.
and have fun with it and do interesting stuff
mm-hmm.
and have a real season, short season, but a season. But it allows us to do it well.
Yeah.
Some real good prep time, good post time, and really proud of what we've done, I think.
And the weird thing is that's the norm on cable and in UK.
Yeah.
I mean, they do
absolutely.
9, 10, 13 is a big order.
Yep.
I don't even. And then, whereas here, it's kind of an anomaly, although it's slowly but surely, more and more broadcast networks are going, why not have a half season with two
I'll
different shows?
Why. I mean, the problem is they make money on every. I mean, this is not that interesting necessarily, but that is, they want lots and lots and lots of episodes because
right.
they make money per episode.
Right.
The cable
right.
model is changing that.
Yeah.
The cable
yeah.
model, the Amazon model, Netflix model.
Right.
It's changing all that, and good for Global for jumping on board early.
Well, and when a show like Breaking Bad becomes one of the most profitable shows
mm-hmm.
in television history or something, they're like, oh, there's huge cash.
Right.
Well, and Down Abbey.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we can do period drama and have an 8-month hiatus in between episodes,
mm-hmm.
and people will still come back in droves, and we can still make tons of cash.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Now, you talked about House, you know, obviously you had to do a heavy amount of research, medical research for that show. And for a show like Houdini and Doyle,
lots of medical research.
Lots of research, yeah. Kinds of research, though, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You've got to get stuff right. You've got to get the look right. You've got to get the wardrobe right. So, how much of that was kind of a daunting task to put all that kind of stuff together and to do the research
and the wardrobe,
real stories?
Wardrobe, Hazleton's become an. No, we've got people. We've got people
right.
who do that.
Right.
And actually, that, to be honest with on that stuff,
yeah.
that's just been fun for us.
Okay.
That aspect has just been fun because
okay.
we don't even have to do that much
right.
on that. And we get the beauty of showing up on set or whatever or getting pictures sent to us and go, oh my God, that looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, just in the location scouting. It's so much, you know, you write this stuff, 1901 London, and you go, I don't know how they're going to do that. It's very easy to type that.
Yes.
Very much more difficult to produce it.
Yes.
And then you show up on a location scout, and they take you into this building, and you go, oh, God, I completely buy that I'm in a convent in 1901 in London.
Right.
And that's just, I think the audience is going to enjoy that. It's just fun. And then we do have to, we spend money. We get a neighborhood that looks completely like London would have looked like, exactly like it would have looked 100 years ago, except there are satellite dishes on
right.
the roof.
You right. know? Right.
So, you know, we got to paint those out post-production.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also been interesting drawing the line between historical accuracy and artistic license.
Sure.
And it was a little bit of a struggle at first, like where do we draw that line? And for us, it's always been, you have to tell the story.
Right.
And when historical accuracy gets in the way, and I know this kind of sounds horrible, but when it gets in the way of telling a good story, that's the thing that gives.
Okay.
But whenever we find a fact or factoid...
So they all have iPhones.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Although that...
We researched
that, and apparently that wasn't invented until, I think, 2006.
But that's one of the things we're willing to bend on.
So it's after 1901.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, but we're gonna bend on that.
Yeah.
That's not true.
But so, you know, there will definitely be some audience members that find historical flaws in it. And you know what? I go for it, because this isn't a documentary, and...
we're trying to be true to the basic nature of their characters and the world, and not... Look, we took liberties with the timing of Doyle's wife's illness, but she had the illness we portrayed.
Yes.
We took some liberties here and there, but they weren't on... It would be important to me not to make major compromises on that. But it's also, as David says, the big thing is creating a show that says something.
Mm-hmm.
And is entertaining and says something.
Oh, come on.
1 minute.
I'll just pretend. So tell me about the structure of each episode. How is there a crime of the week that the guys are involved in? How is that going to shape out?
It's the basic format is procedural. So we have an A story, which is paranormal event of the week. The card three people are drawn to, fascinated to solve, find out the reality behind it, and that's the engine. That's the story engine for each episode. But again, as we like to say, it's like that's the delivery system really for telling a character story,
because
you got these two iconic characters that have two really wildly different points of view. Adelaide sort of caught in the middle, and that's kind of the fun of it, is you know, where did she land on these things when you have two brilliant people making incredibly compelling, you know, intellectual and emotional arguments,
right?
And she's caught in the middle, and that's what we want to do. We want to, you know, take these A stories and you know, with a beginning, a middle, and an end, but also kind of unpack them a little bit, and like, what does this tell us about our characters? And you know, if you're confronted by a ghost or you're confronted by an alien, what is your worldview? How does it force you to perceive that?
Right.
Do you say it was a dream, I was drunk, or I just had an alien encounter? And that kind of defines, I think it defines most of the population of Western civilization.
Right.
You're going to fall into one of those two camps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I accept it, or I need an alternate rational explanation for that.
And obviously, I saw a trailer for it last night, and it looks as though there's a healthy dose of humor in there as well.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean,
who put that in? That's not...
Is that the show you signed on to?
Should not be fun.
No, we want it to be grounded. We want it to be real. It's not a sitcom by any means. But yes, look, I think it's... You got character. You got two guys
right.
who are competing with each other
yes.
on every... every level. Yes. There's going to be a sense of humor. It's personal to them, but it's ultimately not. They both want truth, mm-hmm. and that allows them to. They don't necessarily laugh, but it allows us to laugh.
Right, right.
And it's what I think both of us like to do. We want to tell grounded, real stories with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
We want it to be fun. We want people to have a little grin on their face, even when they're scared, not realize they got a grin on their face.
Right, right.
Also, I think when you cut anything with humor, you're actually allowed to get a little deeper with stuff.
Yeah.
It allows you to delve a little deeper because it's the treacle cutter.
Right.
You know, you're allowed to go there.
Well, thanks to the two Davids of Houdini and Doyle, and thanks to Greg David. Hang on, there's way too many Davids involved here. For sitting down and doing that short interview with them. And thanks to Greg and Diane for helping me get together and talk a little bit at the beginning about historical dramas, kind of use that as our little framing device for what is normally a shorter interview than usual, but that's okay. If it allows us to bring you fans of this show, which is just starting up, if you're enjoying it and you get to hear like some early stuff with a couple of the people who helped put this show together, then I think that's valuable. So even though we might not have a full 45-minute or hour-long thing, I think it's worth bringing to you, and that's why we did it this way this week. The loose form of the TV ABCs podcast. You can find all the past episodes at tv-eh.com. Click on podcast at the top, and if you want to support the podcast financially, you don't have to. You can always listen for free. But if you go to Patreon, patreon.com/TV_EH, and you feel that each episode might be worth a buck, or even less, you can contribute that on a weekly, monthly basis, however you want to do it. We certainly would appreciate it. My name is Anthony Marco, and you can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. Find all of my other podcasts at anthonymarco.com. That wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.